if you think about the history of allopathic medicine, we're really good at emergencies. But that's not the current issue that we have in America and where we're spending all of our money. We're spending all of our money on chronic disease. And allopathic medicine just has not much more than kind of pills and physical therapy to throw at that. So we really have to focus on helping people to change the way that they live their life. And this model allows me the time to do that. So I have the time to spend with people at the beginning so I can, you know, allow them to speak uninterrupted so they can tell me their story. They can tell me their concerns. They can tell me their goals. And then I can create a personalized plan to help them reach their goals in the way that they want to reach them by kind of listening to what they've tried in the past, what's failed in the past, what's been successful, what, you know, kind of can we work on in the future.
As you know, if you've listened to previous episodes of this podcast at Point Health, we are focused on making healthcare easy to find, easy to understand, and easier to afford. As we launched Point Health, we wanted to share what we learned during the process of building the company. So we started this podcast where we are lucky enough to talk with some of the best minds in healthcare and technology to get their advice on how we can make the biggest difference. Today, I am very excited to be joined by special guests, Dr. Chris Larson and Dr. April Calderon of Euphora Health, an awesome direct primary care practice located here in Austin, which I happen to be a member of, along with my wife, and I'm a big fan of. So thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Larson, Dr. Calderon.
Thank you. Hello. We're happy to
Thank
be here.
You.
Excited.
Yeah. And I'll give you a little bio on each of them, and then we'll jump in. And I think this is going to be fun. So Dr. Larson came to medicine after, interestingly, having started a career in finance, which I'm sure we'll talk a bit about. After witnessing the deleterious, the tough word, effects of modern medical practice on relatives and loved ones, he decided to return to school and become a doctor. His goal in medicine is to help people live healthier lives with less pain while reducing the risk of modern treatments, which I can say I can attest to as a patient. He entered the medical field not only to make a difference in the world, but also to find a better way to serve patients than the current healthcare system. And he began with the goal to find purpose in improving the lives of others and a sense that he could do better. And Dr. Calderon was born and raised here in Austin, which is rare. She's a unicorn. There aren't many Austinites who live here and are born here and raised here. And has wanted to be a doctor since she was a child, playing with her doctor set. That's really cute because I was just playing with my 3-year-old Clara, literally, and she was the doctor and we were working on her big stuffed animal dog. So,
oh, love that.
Follow in those footsteps. Her goal is to help patients find their own path to health. She knows that this will be a different path for each person, and she takes pride in being able to guide her patients, no matter their background, down the path that is right for them. Her professional interests include preventative care, women's health care, pediatrics, and dermatology. And she is board certified by the American Board of Family Medicine and speaks Spanish, which is awesome. And my wife has had nothing but great things to say about you, Dr. Calderon, as well. So this is going to be a blast. So let's start out with an interesting one. I know you guys are awesome. You're an unstoppable duo. Somehow you're both here without the kids in the background, which is really impressive. I can say we've got three, and I know that's really hard to do. So bravo already. But going back a little bit, how did you two meet? How did this all kind of start? And I guess for those who don't know, Dr. Calderon and Larson are married as well. So spoiler alert, I guess there. But I'd love to maybe just go back and hear from y'all's perspective. You know, how did you meet and how did you end up kind of coming together and deciding to start this practice?
So I'll start. Hi, I'm Dr. Calderon. I would say a very simple answer is we met in med school. And I'll let Dr. Larson take it away.
Yeah, you know, it's in med school, I think like many other graduate schools, you know, you get to know people really well because you spend a lot of time with them, 16, 18 hours a day at times, you know, studying right next to them. And so we got to know each other really well. We had a good time. And then, you know, first 2 years in med school, you're kind of in the library, in the classroom, then everybody goes their own separate ways. And years 3 and 4, you're in the hospital. So you may be in the same city, but you're spending lots of time separated. And then you go to residency, and April went to a residency in Waco. I went to a residency in San Antonio, and then kind of, you know, split ways at that point, but then both moved back to Austin and then kind of, you know, continued the relationship there before getting married.
The rest is history.
As they say, right? Yeah. And then maybe talking a little bit about your practice. So, you know, some of the folks who listen here have heard us talk about direct primary care and talk about you guys more than once, probably. But just, you know, to maybe give it an overview, could you talk a little bit about what is direct primary care? I think, Dr. Larson, you did a little bit of research on this and, you know, the different options that were available to make a difference in healthcare and make it more affordable. Ultimately, what led you, you know, down this path, and how did you decide to move forward with direct primary care?
Yeah, so even when kind of deciding to give up that career in finance, go back to undergraduate, take a couple of years worth of classes, even to just apply to medical school, I already knew that I wanted to do this a different way. And while in residency from kind of 2007 to 2010, I was investigating different models of care, and really DPC wasn't in the lay press at that point. There was a model that somewhat close, I'd call it a Robin Hood model. So it's concierge practice, higher price point. And these people had half of their population paying the concierge prices. And then they kind of took some of the profits from that side and subsidized the care of other people who couldn't afford those same prices to give this level of care. And that just, I didn't think that was, you know, my goal is to provide great care, but also change the healthcare system in my own small way at the same time. And I just didn't think that was going to change the healthcare system. So kind of continued to work at an urgent care where I had been moonlighting as a resident, even after residency, continued to work there. And then about 2013, I started reading more about direct primary care in the lay press. And certainly with a finance background, could kind of backwards engineer the model. But honestly, even those, you know, that were just a physician, didn't go to, you know, get an undergraduate degree in finance, I think this model is simple enough that you could really kind of put it together on the back of an envelope, and it makes sense. You know, some portion of this is Netflix, meaning there's an affordable monthly fee. And if you don't watch any movies, or if you don't get any healthcare that month, you still pay that fee. But if you want to binge on healthcare, just like you might binge on movies, we don't charge you anything extra. There's no charge for my time, whether you access me by text, phone, video, face-to-face. And then there's a Costco portion, which is once you pay your membership, we try to give you wholesale discounts on everything that we can, including labs and procedures. You know, many of our procedures, we just eat the cost, and it's $0 for an EKG, for removing a nail, sewing up a laceration, removing a lesion. And then you can kind of finally count on your primary care doctor to do what your primary care doctor should do. And that's helped guide you through the healthcare system when you need that. And I kind of count myself as a financial concierge within the healthcare system so that I can keep my patients from stepping on healthcare landmines, which are all over the place.
How about you, Dr. Calderon? So what, I think if I understand correctly, I think you started Dr. Larson, and then Dr. Calderon, you joined later. Is that right?
I did. Yeah. I actually took more of a traditional path, and I say traditional because when you are in a system like a residency program, maybe the only thing you learn, or one of the main things you learn, is how to be a doctor, but also how to code correctly so that insurance will pay. Yeah. And you have to learn those things in residency because you don't learn them anywhere else. And then you further that training later when you get into your own practice. But so I went through the traditional model. I worked for a hospital-based company. It was a big hospital-based clinic, but I was in outpatient medicine. And then I also worked for a smaller group that was, you know, 10 doctors who basically were sharing all the overhead costs. And so I became a partner. And after going through those two different models, I saw different things that led me to say, gosh, there has to be a better way. You know, the first route was the hospital was basically kind of detailing how that they what they wanted my day to be and how I should treat patients, which meant, you know, you need to see about 25 patients a day, and you take a lunch from this time to this time, and you spend about 5 to 7 minutes of it. So they were kind of dictating that. And then when I got into the point where I was my own boss, then I actually saw the conflict between medicine and then the business side of medicine. So practicing medicine and that business side, I couldn't actually do what I wanted to do and care for patients, because I was a little kind of pushed into, oh gosh, am I going to meet that overhead? Well, actually now I have to see more patients, and I found myself fitting more and more in so I could make that. So yeah, I kind of came into it the back way.
Well, and now that you guys have kind of both been doing this for a while, how do you compare? So if you think back to what you were doing before, what's the difference in terms of your quality of life? How do you feel like you're able to treat your patients? Are there pros and cons maybe that you've seen in the two different systems?
April, since you kind of spent more time in insurance-based primary care, I'll let you start.
Yeah, sure. Sorry, I didn't want to bogart the conversation. But yeah, I would say there's some significant differences from the doctor side and then from the patient side. But since we're going to focus on patients, you know, direct primary care really is focusing on patient care and making that your top priority. So really putting patients ahead of everything, including, you know, that bottom line, because you're not always chasing that bottom line. So in insurance medicine, insurance-based practice, I should say, traditionally you're getting a copay and then you're getting a percentage of what you charge. And so within that, you're only allotting a certain time because you have to see more and more patients and do more and more, but things get put on the back burner, and specifically communication. So, you know, people call and they may get an automated system, or they may get a front staff who doesn't really know them or know their care. They may not be able to get that x-ray that they wanted because they have to go through a couple of hoops, or not be able to go to physical therapy yet because they have to meet certain requirements. So there's just so many barriers that I've found working in a kind of traditional insurance-based practice that I don't have with direct primary care. You know, the top things that I see are there's significant changes in accessibility to patients and communication with patients, and in general that leads to happier, healthier patients and better care.
Anything you'd add, Dr. Larson, on your side?
Yeah, I mean, I think it becomes, I don't have as much experience in the kind of insurance-based practice as April did, certainly in residency and the from an urgent care standpoint, but from a high level, I mean, kind of the trade-off is that as the physician, almost from a marketing standpoint, you kind of say, hey, I agree to take insurance-based patients. Mm-hmm. But in that trade-off, what that means is that you're going to get paid a very small amount. And so to be paid in that small amount per visit, but also pay for the amount of overhead that's required to run a practice, you end up having to see 25 or 30 patients a day. And when you kind of run the numbers of what that looks like when you only have 8 hours to see patients, you just don't have very much time to spend on everybody's care. And then combining that with classically, the only way that you could get paid as an insurance-based doctor is to see the person face-to-face. Well, then you're always requiring that the patient come to you. You keep their medications hostage. You have to see them face-to-face for something that could easily be taken care of by, with a picture or a video call. And that's how you end up with this morass of a clinic that is really what's best for the doctor and what's best for the insurance company, as opposed to what's best for the patient.
Oh, you hit on so many points there that the medication one drove me crazy. I mean, because I'm on blood pressure medication and I have to get it renewed, and I'd have to go to the doctor and it was pointless. I'd just go in there, I'd sit down, I'd wait, I'd be around a bunch of other sick people. And then I'd, you know, go in, and it was just kind of like the same conversation. Well, how are your numbers this month? Okay, cool. All right. Well, here's the script. And it was so dumb. So I that's been one of my favorite parts of being a part of a DPC practice. And the craziest thing to me was that hour-long first visit. I don't think I've ever spent an hour with a doc, other than maybe like playing golf. My dad's a dentist, so when dentists like to play golf on Friday. But like, other than that, I don't think I'd ever been around a doctor for that long. That was awesome. How has that been? I know, Dr. Calderon, you said you really like to, I think, you know, treat patients individually and kind of based on their own needs and creating a path that's right for them. How has that been, being able to spend that hour and really understand the patient?
It's been amazing. And, you know, I always say to my patients, you're probably going to tell me, you know, if something is going on, but you're probably going to tell me what's wrong with you. And I'm just going to listen, and I'm just going to try to kind of sift through all the information. And so when I say it makes me a better doctor to have that amount of time, it literally makes me a better doctor because I, first of all, know what maybe they'd like to do kind of based off of their treatment preferences, but I also can spend that time listening. And so, yeah, it's just that hour is significant because you really do get to get into, you know, most patients are, I think, so enamored with the fact that, you know, they get to spend that hour, but they also kind of go through diet, exercise. So you're really focusing more on a holistic plan rather than, and this is what I see kind of the difference between direct primary care and maybe the traditional model is, you know, I'm not needing to just put out fires because I can't ever catch up. I'm able to be more preventive.
I love that. Yeah. What I know, as you were talking, it reminded you said fitness. I remember Dr. Larson, I think in our first visit, I was in a grad program. My wife was pregnant with our third kid. And you, I think you said, you were like, oh, that's a mistake. You were like, well, you should have talked to me before that happened. And then I think the next thing you said was something about, well, you know, how are you going to keep working out? Like, how are you going to do all these things while, you know, you're about to have your third kid? And it was a good question. I never had a doctor ask me that before. Is that something that comes up often? I mean, when you're, it's almost like you're a life coach in a way with your patients when you first meet with them.
I want to clarify that I said that was a mistake only because I had made that same mistake myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a part of why I chose this model and why I really think it can change the healthcare system is, you know, once again, let's go back to why I got into medicine in the first place, which is like, I want to help people change their lives. And so if you think about the history of allopathic medicine, yeah, we're really good at emergencies, mm-hmm. but that's not the current issue that we have in America and where we're spending all of our money. We're spending all of our money on chronic disease. And allopathic medicine just has not much more than kind of pills and physical therapy to throw at that. So we really have to focus on helping people to change the way that they live their life. And this model allows me the time to do that. So I have the time to spend with people at the beginning so I can, you know, allow them to speak uninterrupted so they can tell me their story. They can tell me their concerns. They can tell me their goals. And then I can create a personalized plan to help them reach their goals in the way that they want to reach them by kind of listening to what they've tried in the past, what's failed in the past, what's been successful, what, you know, kind of can we work on in the future, and then really just tailor things to them. And so this gives me the time to, number one, have those conversations with them. And then the number two, know them well enough so that I can tailor my advice towards what is most likely to work for them.
Yeah, man. Well, I won't harp on it. I know I'm certainly a fan. I think it's been valuable. I did want to ask, you know, with the model, so there's a number of benefits and reasons why someone might do this, but I did want to ask both of you. So, you know, with your practice, do you mostly work with individual patients? Do you partner with employers? We tend to interview a lot of and speak with, you know, kind of folks in the insurance and benefits and self-insured kind of world. And so I did want to ask y'all kind of how that worked and who you tended to work with more and what it looks like, I guess, when you work with a group. So I don't know, Dr. Larson, if that's one that you might want to jump in on.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So we work individuals. Yeah. We work with individuals. We work with small businesses who can't, you know, they've been priced out of the traditional healthcare market for probably a decade now. We're talking, you know, mom and pop restaurants, child care centers, janitorial services, things of that nature. And then we also work in a more kind of integrated or dovetailed fashion with larger employer groups. And we do that on a kind of brick and mortar fashion for those groups that have employees that are close to us. And we can also offer a virtual only service within the state of Texas for these same employer groups and even individuals. My own opinion is that if we really want to try to change the healthcare system, we need to work with those people that hold the purse strings, which are, you know, 55% of the healthcare bills in America are paid by employers. And so if we're unwilling to work directly with them, I think they're going to be hard pressed to really make any drastic changes. And so I'm willing and openly looking for ways to do that. To this point, you know, we've really have been able to work with only those groups that I would say are at the fringe for one reason or another. Either they have a CEO that's just kind of hard charging and really wants to optimize everything about their business, including their healthcare plan, are potentially people that are about to be priced out of the health insurance market, and they get desperate and are willing to take on a model that just they haven't heard about before. And then for the small kind of local businesses, they just want to, they feel like their employees are their family. And so they want to treat those people like family and give them some access to care, even if they can't afford the traditional $400 a month BUCA insurance. And so providing, you know, $70 a month DPC, they feel like that's great. And then kind of bread and butter for DPC has certainly been working with individuals.
And how have you guys seen this kind of model change over time? And as you talked about, there's individuals and groups, and it, I think, again, makes a ton of sense for these groups, as you said. How have you guys seen it change? And maybe how do you see it growing, I think, is maybe the question. Because obviously I'm a fan. I think everyone who tries it likes it for the most part. How do you see this kind of expanding and growing and changing over time? I don't know, Dr. Calderon, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, I've done a couple of networking groups. As a doctor, that's a little bit harder. I feel like, you know, we never want to toot our own horn, but that has been an interesting kind of interaction and way into the business community. But what I would say is, you know, I think everyone has realized, especially with the pandemic, how important having some access to medical care is. And then the, you know, the cherry on top is, oh, wow, I can offer 24/7 access. And so sometimes the hard part is like trying to get people to understand that it actually isn't too good to be true. It is, you know, kind of what we say it is what it is. And, you know, that's how we want the practice to run and to be price transparent. And so I think as more and more people kind of catch on, although I do agree with Dr. Larson when he says it really is right now, those people who are kind of looking for something different, who are on that fringe, who maybe can't afford, you know, the traditional kind of plans for their employees, but they feel like their family. They really want to make sure that they're healthy, and they really want to give them something different. So I think, you know, I think there's going to be more of a kind of marketplace where there's more options. I mean, there's more options for healthcare popping up everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, you're almost talking about going back to how medicine used to be, you know, local. And I've talked about this in the past. My dad would, he used to barter with people. I've said this before, but we'd like get a new fence because, you know, he did a crown on a guy who has a fencing company. And my dad, you know, he'd love to see that be more prominent. But anyway, in a way, I feel like y'all are kind of doing that. What about you, Dr. Larson? How do you see this kind of growing and expanding?
Yeah, I mean, since I've been doing this, you know, I certainly see with kind of more recognition by just the general populace, there's more uptake. You know, as she was mentioning, like at the beginning, I would tell people about this, and their response was, "How are you going to steal my money? Like, this is too good to be true." And so, as you can imagine, as a marketing guy, like how easy is it to sell something when their first thought is, how are you going to steal my money? And so there's, you know, certainly there's been more kind of chatter amongst individuals. There's more articles in the lay press about this. There's more, you know, on social media, radio media, that kind of thing. And so there's more individuals coming to us. And then certainly kind of word of mouth locally has made it a little bit easier. I think on a going forward basis, I think that you'll just see more physicians and groups kind of experiment with this in different ways. I think the University of Houston has just obtained a grant where they're kind of implementing a network-based DPC model within Houston to try to provide subsidized care to the at-risk population and low socioeconomic status. So just one example of an experiment that's going on that, you know, maybe this could be used in inner cities, you know, across America on a subsidized basis.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I'm from Houston. I lived in inner city Houston for a while. So I'm very near UH. And I think that would make a huge difference there. I've been trying to talk my dad into opening a DPC dental practice. They've got 3 or 4 practices up in Northwest Houston, and I'm trying to figure out how we can do DPC dental someday. My sister's actually about to graduate from dental school. She's in her fourth year.
That'd be awesome.
So yeah, we got to figure it out. I saw a group in New York called, I think it was Welly, and they're doing something like it, but my dad had some issues with it. So, you know, we got to figure out the model, but I think there's something there. So I wanted to ask too, I think as a patient, and sometimes when I talk about it, I get questions. So it's like, you know, what if it's not a primary care need? What if you have an emergency? What if you need more than, you know, something the doctor can do? How does that work? How do you help your patients maybe when they have non-primary care needs, like you need to see a specialist? And you mentioned labs and, you know, kind of the additional things that go with that. I'm just curious, maybe to start, what do you do when someone needs a specialist, and how do you recommend that person when you know that maybe the member or the individual patient doesn't have traditional insurance?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. That's one that I have really had to focus on a little more, because I was coming from a practice where, you know, it was basically just, you know, go to whatever doctor you want and maybe your insurance will pay for it. But it's a little better. It's a little more intimate of a relationship. And so we try to keep more things, or I try to keep more things in house now. And I know Dr. Larson has always done that, to where, you know, we're trying to really utilize not only our knowledge and expertise, but also our understanding of the healthcare system and the finances within the healthcare system, and trying to get our patients to the point where they may be ready for a treatment, or they may be ready to go to a specialist and get something specific, rather than going to a specialist and trying to figure out a diagnosis and then go from there. So going to a specialist for a specific need, which might be something that we can't do. And Dr. Larson and I think this is one thing that I've seen work really well, is direct primary care with the family medicine doctor, because we're trained to do so much. And he mentioned that I went to residency in Waco, and I have to, you know, applaud my residency. It was a hard residency. And we did everything from delivering babies sometimes in our clinic, well, almost in our own clinic, in our outpatient clinic, to, you know, doing a semi colonoscopy. You know, I did colposcopies, and I still do some of that. And so I have some really great hands-on training. And I think family medicine, the family medicine background provides that. And so, you know, it just is dependent upon what the patient needs, but being their advocate is truly something that I feel is my responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, what I'd start with is just saying you got to change your frame of reference when you say, well, what about when I need a specialist? Because if you're starting with, you know, going to your insurance-based primary care doctor, I mean, lots of things are going to need to be referred out to a specialist simply because that doctor doesn't have the time to address it. If you made an appointment for a sore throat, but you have a mole that needs to be biopsied, well, they gave you a 15-minute visit. That means the medical assistant spent 3 or 4 of those minutes getting your vital signs. The doctor's there for 5 minutes so that they could walk out and spend another 5 minutes documenting things. They could do a sore throat visit in that time frame, but the biopsy, what they're going to say is like, I've got to get on, they won't say this, but what they're thinking is, I have to get to my next visit or that patient's going to be upset, and then I'm going to be late for the rest of the day, and then I'm going to be late to get home. They want to get home. They want to get to the next patient on time. They don't want a bad Yelp review. They want their day to flow well. And so it's just easier to say, why don't you go to the dermatologist for this lesion, and they'll take care of it. So when you take a primary care physician, what I would say is, I'm a specialist in common problems. So I have a wide breadth of knowledge that's deep in some very common issues, maybe a little bit more shallow in less common issues. But if you give me the time that I would need to take care of your issues, many of those things that would have been referred to a specialist in an insurance-based practice don't get referred in my practice. Beyond that, let's say that I have, you know, I feel comfortable making a diagnosis, but I don't feel comfortable providing the treatment plan. Well, I now have, even if you're not in the office with me, I now have time I can spend on your care. Maybe I can go do some extra research to be able to get comfortable. Even if I can't, there are services that we belong to where I can tell your story for you. I can write up your story. I can send labs. I can send imaging to a specialist and get an answer from the specialist to answer my questions within 24 hours. This used to be what's called a curbside consult. Have you heard of that?
I actually haven't. No, that's interesting.
Yeah. So this is, you know, the curbside is at the doctor's parking at the hospital, where primary care physicians used to go to the hospital to see their patients. And at the side of the curb, they would also see the cardiologist of Ms. Smith, who's the shared patient. And instead of making Ms. Smith go to the cardiologist's office because she has an issue, the doctor, the primary care would just say, hey, cardiologist, what do I do for this and that? And the doctor would get the consult as opposed to the patient getting the consult. So that was the curbside consult. Those days are gone because we're not going to the hospital anymore, but there are services that are being set up that would allow me, or maybe I could call a local specialist to get some advice to either help make the diagnosis or get all the labs and testing done so that when the patient does have to go to that doctor's office, there's one visit as opposed to, yeah, you came, but you didn't bring all the information. Let me get all the labs and visit and imaging done and then come back and then we'll do that. And so even when there is a specialist visit kind of required, we can optimize the patient before going. And then we're going to kind of tailor that referral based on their needs, whether they're no insurance at all, or whether they have Sedera, or whether they have Buca-based insurance. I'm going to refer based on what's best for them financially.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then I think one last thing on that, one last really, I think, important point is there are a lot of specialists who are kind of trying to do the same thing. I mean, I know of a rheumatologist who wants to have a direct primary care practice and she's trying to set it up. I know of an ophthalmologist. I mean, there are just specialists that are trying to have a better relationship without and trying to do better with patients, do better patient care without having all the red tape.
Well, that was
which is really cool to see.
Absolutely. And I was going to mention, you kind of hit it there, but on the ophthalmologist side, I know I had an issue with my eye and we tried to fix it and we did a couple of things. And finally it was like, you know what, we just need to see an ophthalmologist. And I appreciated, I think you referred me to one here in Austin and she was great. And she actually, you know, I told her this is what I have. Like, this is my situation. I'm a member of Sedera. I have a DBC. And she pulled out a paper and it was, you know, all the prices and it was like a price list. And she was like, okay, well, we can do this, 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 and this. And this is what it's going to cost. And that just doesn't happen very often when you see a doctor. I remember actually prior I went to a specialist when I had, you know, traditional insurance and my deductible was quite high. And I believe I paid like $450 for that visit. And they basically saw me for about 10 minutes. And he didn't really do anything. And he kind of just said, okay, well, you know, eat more fiber. That's about it. And I was like, man, I just paid, you know, almost $500 for that. And so... yeah, I guess I appreciate that you, I think, are, you know, thoughtful with who you send patients to.
I think we try to provide, you know, curated care. Like we have a cadre of specialists and a relatively kind of narrow kind of referral network when we're allowed to use those doctors. If somebody says, because my insurance, I can't use your preferred cardiologist. Okay, I'm going to try to do what's best for you. But we tend to choose specialists based on those that provide high value care.
Yep. I love the idea of like rewarding those doctors. And that's something we care about at Point Health is we're trying to build this, you know, network of information and prices and with our advocates who help negotiate and navigate patients. Like we want to ultimately send our members to the facilities and doctors like yourselves and like, you know, the free market medical centers and Oklahoma surgery centers that are kind of practicing this and putting it out there. So talking about the prices side of things and kind of how that works, I wanted to ask two things. First, I wanted to ask, what about all the labs and imaging and kind of all that stuff when someone needs that, if they don't have traditional insurance, how does that work? And kind of where do you send them when they come to you guys?
Yeah, so we work with there's kind of three big lab companies in the U.S. A couple of them are nationwide, and then there's one that's kind of a little bit more regional. And basically, we have a contract with the labs. And so this is more of the Costco model, right? Like you've already paid your membership fee. We're not going to make a profit on these other things. And so there's a minimal markup on labs. And so, you know, a blood count is $5. A thyroid screening test, the TSH, $5. A three-month blood sugar average is $5. You know, you could probably multiply all these numbers by probably at least 10 when you poll the insurance-based clinics around us, which we have done. And, you know, I have a number of patients that have ended up on my doorstep because they say, look, I actually can't go back to my insurance-based doctor because I have bad debt. Because, you know, for these clinics, when you come in for your three-month visit, they're going to want all their labs and do all these things. And it's a little bit of it's profit shifting, right? Like if we don't make enough on the visit, we have to make that up somewhere else. And that's where we end up with $150 EKGs and expensive labs. And they have bad debt with these clinics, and the clinic won't allow them to come back in and see the doctor anymore until they pay the debt, and they just can't pay it.
Yeah. And I would say that there is nothing better than when a patient walks in and, you know, maybe they have a thyroid issue and they say, oh my gosh, I need thyroid labs, but it's just been so expensive to get. And they're like, well, how much would my labs be here? And I can say, oh, for just a general thyroid panel, it'll be $15. We'll get the thyroid hormones, we'll get the TSH. And so just being able to be that price transparent, but also as a doctor that was working in an insurance-based practice, when someone asked me what a lab was, I would just say, please consult your insurance and then get back to me, because inevitably I would be wrong. I would say something was covered and it wasn't, and then somebody would get upset. And, you know, being a patient myself, I've been through that where I thought something was covered and I ended up getting a $750 bill when if I would have done it through Euphora Health and the cash based kind of practice, it would have been $45. So it's just so, you know, crazy. People are so, I think, happy to just have that comfort of price transparency, to know what their all in is. And it's so much like a tenth less of what they expected.
Oh yeah. I know that was my case. I think Dr. Larson joked, like, he was like, well, we're gonna have to do a couple labs and it might be a little pricey. Going to cost about $20. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, four labs at $20, not bad. And I actually compared, I looked at Fair Cost Labs, or there were a couple, I looked at a couple different sites and I was comparing pricing, and the one that basically what I paid for where you sent me, it was significantly less than even the lowest price I found on some of those sites that offered discounted, you know, pricing. So it worked well for me. And you, I think you both talked a little bit about price transparency, which I did want to ask about. It's something we've talked about a ton on this show and had lots of guests kind of who are experts on this. But I wanted to ask you guys are in a way practicing price transparency, because it's pretty clear that this is the price for us on a monthly fee and this is kind of what it costs. And then if you send someone out, then, you know what that's going to be as well. But how have you guys seen, as price transparency is becoming more common, in, you mentioned like the lay media, you know, it's being featured. There was a huge New York Times article you probably both saw about price transparency from Sarah Cliff last week. How do you see that having an effect or not having an effect? How do you think it actually could have an effect? I'm just curious to get your thoughts on kind of the larger, both the price transparency rules and then kind of the movement that's happening around it. I don't know if
I think we, you know, when you kind of combine price transparency with, you know, people like to compare this to grocery shopping or shopping for a refrigerator. And that's just not what happens for patients in healthcare. You know, somebody is told they have cancer or somebody is told that they need a big surgery. Could they go shop for the price? Certainly they could. But it's just not easy to do. And that's not the mindset that they're in at that moment. They have bigger issues to think about in that moment than what is all of this going to cost. And so I think this is best done when we both have price transparency and we have a guide to the system for the patient. Certainly if there's, you know, hey, you need a general adult panel or an elective hernia surgery that, you know, it doesn't matter if you do that today or in 3 months. Yeah, let's let the person go shop. But in many other situations, there's just such a strong set of emotions that comes with this, that kind of asking them to make a logical decision based on data when they have to go gather this data, which can be difficult to gather, even in the best scenarios. That's just, I don't know that that's likely to happen for a lot of these things. And so I think it's great. Certainly you're seeing a push for it with the hospital. Certainly you're seeing companies spring up who kind of use this as their launch pad with price transparency. But to really make a dent here, I believe that we need a guide to the system as well as the transparency.
Yeah,
I would agree with a guide, but I do think that it is. I mean, I have never seen happier patients than I do now when they know what is expected of them financially before they come in. you know, I mentioned before that I've been doing a little more follow-up to abnormal labs, including abnormal pap smears. And so sometimes I will see patients who aren't members who, from the get-go, they know this is how much this procedure is going to cost, and then this is how much the biopsies are going to cost. And some of them do say for 3 months, and then they come in and get it done, but they're just surprised that they don't, they're always surprised that they don't have extras added on. And that's just doesn't, you know, it doesn't lead to great healthcare if someone is, you know, worried about kind of what's it going to cost when I thought it was going to cost this. And, you know, they're just, they get all these surprise bills.
Yeah, it's a horrible experience. And that's, you hit on two things there that we care a lot about in, because we do offer, you know, patient advocacy. And so we have a team of navigators who essentially help patients navigate a confusing system, which I agree. The prices are a good starting point, but you need more than just that, because it's incredibly complicated. And also we do offer kind of the negotiation side as well, because we get patients who get hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills, and there's just no way they could ever afford that. And so, we're not really caring for the patients when they're in that situation. I mean, they're put in such a bad financial situation that it's a very, very difficult position to be put in. Well, you know, man, I love the model that you guys have. Obviously, I'm a fan. I think everyone that has, you know, I've spoken with, they really see something here. I did want to ask maybe one last question. We're just now ending our time, but I had to ask one more. I want to see this grow, and I'm curious. Obviously, there's a limited number of doctors in the country, right? And so that limits how much the model can expand. Have you guys seen anything where, you know, folks are bringing in like PAs or NPs or like other specialists who could potentially help play a role in this growing? I'm curious if that's ever been explored or something y'all thought about.
You know, I think there are individual doctors out there that have started to work with mid-levels. What I would say is certainly if, you know, somebody flips a switch and says, hey, all primary care is direct primary care, we've got an issue, right? Because there's going to be gaps when you go from insurance-based doctors, primary care doctors that maybe have 2,500 to 3,000 patients on their panel, meaning the total number of patients that they might see in a year, going to with direct primary care, traditionally it's about 600 to 800 patients. Well, then there's a lot of people that don't get care or don't have access to care. At the same time, I think if there's a slower transition, some of the primary care physicians that we've pushed out of healthcare, well, at the very least pushed out of primary care in the way of like they've gone to urgent care, or they're working in rural ERs, or they've gone to work for the insurance company and have no patient facing work to be done. Like we can draw all of those doctors back in if we can provide a different model that gives a different lifestyle and a different set of interactions with the patients. And then I think that there are ways long term where, you know, and I think all of medicine is moving towards this, where we kind of think of the physician as the tip of the spear, and there's a team under them to kind of manage, where if we're focusing our time on kind of some of the sickest patients, but then also have more of a Medicare Advantage style team, you know, when I say Medicare Advantage, you know, primary care, I'm thinking more of like CareMore, ChenMed, that kind of thing, where we've got a team-based approach. And I've got health coaches under me to kind of do the diet and lifestyle spiel that I currently do myself. And I love doing it. But at the same time, is that really where my time is best spent? Maybe not. But I think there are other people that could do as well or nearly as well as me and allow me to focus my time on sicker cases. And so we could probably expand the breadth of people that we work with under this model. We just have to think about different ways to do it.
Well, I hope we get to that point where it has grown so much that we've pulled in all the doctors, and this is the new normal, and we have to pull them in because I see so much value in it. Well, we are at the end of our time. Love the conversation. We were joking before we could talk for 3 hours, but you know you have to see patients. Last thing I want to throw out there though was if someone wanted to connect with you online or you know find more information on y'all's work, where should they go?
Yeah, so our website is euphorahealth.com. That's EU. P is in Paul, H-O-R-A, health.com. You can reach us there. And April Dr. Calderon's on social media. Do you remember or care to share any of those handles?
So you can reach me at April.Calderon at Euphora Health. They're just basically, Euphoria Health is always kind of thrown in the mix to all those social media tags. But I think, you know, the last thing is, you know, we're always willing to talk to anyone and have a consult. I think a lot of people are so interested in kind of different models and interested in, would this be right for me? And maybe just afraid to kind of call and talk. And so, yeah, you know, we're both available for consults and we love it. We love interacting with patients.
That's actually, we'll end it here, but that's a good point. Cause I actually, the way that I got connected was I emailed Dr. Larson, I think just kind of out of the blue. I was like, hey, I'm learning about this stuff. I'm in this program. I started this new job. You know, really interested. And you said, yeah, let's talk. And that's, you know, ultimately that's how I ended up joining the practice. So there you go. If you're interested, reach out and learn more. Well, this has been a blast. I love it. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat. We really enjoyed it. Always, as always, learned a ton and thanks for all the you guys are doing. Thanks again for coming on. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Steve.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of the Point Health Podcast. It was an honor to speak with Dr. Larson and Dr. Calderon of Euphoria Health. Thanks again to both of them for joining us today and sharing their experiences running a direct primary care practice. I hold both of them in the highest regard, and I really consider it a privilege to call them my family's primary care doctors. After listening to today's episodes, I hope you will consider joining a DPC practice in your area as well. We can't wait to share more conversations with health experts as we continue to build Point Health. Be sure to subscribe now so you get a heads up when future episodes drop. Thanks for listening.